My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons.
Welcome to a new episode of the show. This is going to be a little bit different. It's just going to be me solo this week. I've mentioned this before. I do usually like bank episodes, so I have something ready each week and everything, and I could put out a regular episode, but knowing that it's coming to the end of the year, I figure I'd just do a little one-off bonus where maybe I answer some of the icebreaker questions and some of the episode questions, you know, myself, just to share some of my own thoughts a little bit and have just a little one-on-one. I guess not really one-on-one. It's one-on-zero. It's just me. Well, yeah. So just have some me time then. You probably hear I have had a cold recently. I think it's been going around everywhere. So take your vitamin C, stay healthy, do what you can. I'm on the upswing of it all. So I apologize for the audio quality if it doesn't sound as good. But that's, you know, the cold, that's health and the ramifications of, the holiday season. So anyway, yeah, that's what I plan to do for the episode for today. So, hopefully I'll enjoy it. Like I said, just a few icebreakers I'll answer, and then I'll go through some of the, episode questions and, maybe answer a couple of those just based on some time and be a nice little short and sweet one-off week. Next week, I will do my Papas, which is the Pixels and Polygon Awards. So it will be my version of like the end of the year wrap up, you know, award nominated and winners chosen kind of compilation. But just for my gaming tastes and from what I played over the year and everything, it will not be a traditional format thing. It's not going to be like, you know, game of the year or anything like that at all. It'll be just kind of a fun way just to kind of shout out and call out some cool recent games and cool things that I've played over the year and just kind of highlight some of the things that were my favorites and stood out just through some kind of random and unique categories. But that will be next week's episode. And then in, you know, following from that, we'll go back into our regularly scheduled, you know, guests based episodes and have some fun there. So, yeah, the only other business up front I could really share obviously is plugging my Patreon again. I have just sent out the second batch of monthly review postcards. So it's something I do for paid contributors to the Patreon where you can get a postcard mailed to you with a cool screenshot on one side and then a review of the game on the backside. So it's like the smallest and shortest video game magazine of all time. So those get mailed out once a month. So I got to send out the second batch of those for this December. And that was something that was cool to do. Otherwise, all the other writing that I do on that website for my Patreon, it's all free. So you can follow along for free. I try and do some, you know, one-off things. I don't have a regular schedule to stick to. So as it's been busier for me, I haven't posted as much, but it's all free. So you can follow along for free. I usually do updates. A recent post I have on there was an update of the beat 'em up book, which my part, my goal was to have all of my writing and what I needed to have done finished by the end of the year. I was able to do that, and I ordered a printed, like, kind of like proof copy just to kind of like see it physically in person, like make sure things, you know, physically on paper are kind of sized and lined up the way I want them to be. So flipping through, you know, I would say 85% complete book is kind of red. So this book is definitely coming along sooner and faster than I was kind of initially thinking it would be. So I'm really excited about that because I also just shipped out the Retro Game Zine issue 1 and 2. So Lots of new content all coming down the pipe. So working on the next issues of the Retro Game Zine now as well. Finishing up the Beat 'Em Up Volume 1 for the unofficial history of the Final Fight franchise. So that'll likely be a Kickstarter here in the new year. To get your own copy, 250 pages or so, covering the entire Final Fight franchise from the original 1989 arcade game all the way up through Final Fight Streetwise on the PS2 and Xbox, plus all the cool like cameos and references that I can kind of compile together just with some fun developmental details and data and just stories about the whole franchise for fans of the series. So that's coming soon. Otherwise, yeah, social media. You can find me on Blue Sky. Links for all that stuff will be in the show notes below. But other than that, I guess we can jump into the episode then. Thanks for that, and we'll see you next week for the Papas. All right. So here we are. We want to answer some of the icebreaker questions, some of the fun ones that I've asked over the last year to my guests, and maybe share some of my own thoughts on that. But yeah, I'm going to try and go, top of my head on these things. Obviously, I came up with the questions and I've asked them multiple times to my guests, but I'll try and just, have some fun answers on the fly, like I try and make my guests answer. But let's just get into it. What game important character have you ever disliked the most? I jokingly have shared this, and a few folks have answered this, but Sora from the Kingdom Hearts games. I've only ever played Kingdom Hearts 1. I didn't finish it, but I've not played any of the sequels or anything, so I don't know too much of the overall boy, that cold still coming back. So yeah, I don't know too much of the history of the series. I know it gets obviously convoluted and crazy and people love it. It's just never been my thing. I've never been a Disney person, so that whole nostalgia aspect of it doesn't necessarily excite me either. But him as a character, I just don't get the draw. He stumbles into needing to be the hero, but for whatever reason, just through the game, it never seems like he is genuinely doing the things that lead, the heroics that lead to the event changing things that will hopefully ultimately save, the drama and save the chaos of the events of the game. So he's just constantly stumbling around, seeing others and the folks that are making cameos within his life and crossing path with are the ones whose story is important. I don't know if that makes sense, but it, just his uselessness and his just kind of more boring design. I don't know if he's supposed to be that every kid, kind of character, but let's just, I don't know. Never been interested in him. He seems more of a bother. But that is one that I've probably disliked the most, for sure. I don't know that I've asked this one yet, but I have it on my list. But what gameplay mechanic do you love that you want to see more of? I think that from 2023, when that Star Ocean Second Story R remake came out, that was my first real dive into that game. I missed the original PlayStation version. I had friends who loved it, but I never played it too much. But there's a mechanic in that where you gain a skill that while you're roaming the world map or where random battles would typically happen, you can have this bodyguard, one of your support characters will appear and will actually approach and eliminate a random battle from happening on the screen, which I think it's kind of cool to control the pacing of the game, so you're not constantly jumping into the battles and having to fight, load, come back out, and continue exploring. It's you still get the experience and everything from it, even if it's only a portion of it, you still get some. And I don't know, to me that it just seems really cool just to help you personally control the pacing of what you want to do. If your goal is to grind out and level up your characters, You could jump into battles and do that. But if you're trying to like explore like the nooks and crannies of like the map and find some secrets and stuff, like, you know, being bombarded with battles, like you're in an exploration mode. You don't want to necessarily have to do that if you don't have to. Some games, you know, if they have like a really fast paced battle system or like quickly gets in and gets out of it, that's one thing. But, you know, other games, you know, it's not necessarily they're designed the same way for every RPG. So that mechanic was really rad. There were some like caveats to it. You had to be like higher than the average level of the enemies who are around you, so you couldn't just skip battles in like harder areas or new areas and stuff. But while you were kind of grinding it out and getting to the level of the area, you could then, you know, squeeze out a few extra levels if you kind of ran around the map and let your bodyguard kind of clear it out. But that's similar to the Dimension from Fantasian. It's recently been re-released on like modern platforms and things. It was the Apple Arcade game from Sakaguchi. But that has an option when you're in like the dungeons or in, you know, out and exploring where random combat would happen. The random battle will just kind of be queued up, and like your initial stock is you can save like 30 enemies in this dimension, and basically you don't have to fight any random battles and you can freely explore without being interrupted until you reach that limit of that threshold, which, like I said, initially it's 30 enemies, and they'll be loaded into a battle where you will fight all 30 enemies that you have kind of queued up. They're not all 30 out on the map at the same time, but you know, there's like 6 to 8, you know, plus of them out there, and then it becomes kind of like almost reminds me a little bit of like the press turn like Persona combat system. Like you're looking at the bottom to see which enemy is going to attack next within the turn order, and if you obviously pull out, you know, like heavier attacks or do things to you know, kill them before it's their turn, you're gonna bump your turn order back up to the top again to kind of take out those who are going to continue to appear as you fight through all 30 plus as the game evolves enemies. So it becomes kind of like a cool like strategy puzzle about like how few hits can the enemies get in against you while you yourself are fighting against all of them. And because it's essentially doing, you know, a massive amount of random battles all queued up at once, you get a large chunk of experience like from doing that. So instead of doing, you know, 10 random battles constantly interrupting your exploration and progress, you're doing one large random battle that's worth 10 times the experience because it's all of those battles all at once. Something about just controlling the pacing of a game and allowing you to play it at the style you want, because you could always turn that dimension off if you do want to just kind of grind it out yourself. But the way it's designed, like, I don't see why you wouldn't want to use that at all times. It's just kind of fun. Obviously, if you go to an area where there's harder enemies and things, you have to analyze them and like have like seen them before in order for them to kind of queue up that way. But if you're in an area where there are some harder enemies, you maybe aren't prepared to like fight through 30 of them. So yeah, it's got some give and take to that, but it's a really cool mechanic. I do enjoy that a lot. I would like to see more of these like quality of life or like pacing enabled like mechanics to like future RPGs, because as I've gotten back into them as an adult and been rolling the credits on more and more, those are the things that help me kind of keep the entertainment in front of me. So yeah. Let's see, another one here. What is your favorite vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game? I've had a few thoughts for this. I like the flip it into that bus in Persona 5. And again, actually kind of piggybacking off that last question, you can get it to a point where you can just mow down through lower level enemies and get all the experience without having to do the battle. And I really like that mechanic. Again, like showing up there in Persona 5, but like just cruising that bus through like the dungeons and all that stuff was really cool. And for an RPG, that was kind of fun to do. What other ones? I mean, I guess Jet Set Radio or Jet Grind Radio, wherever you're from in the world. Skating around the world is fun. It's maybe not the best means of transportation, but yeah. And then I guess the I spent a lot of time with it, but in Destiny, like the pulling out the Sparrow on a map to like jet across like the other side, like I always think it's kind of rad just to kind of summon that out and have some, you know, coming and going of that vehicle on call anytime you wanted to. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else there would be. I think those would be my probably favorite choices there. Maybe something else will come to me a little bit later, but yeah. All right, let's see. All right, what's next? What was the last arcade game you played? I had this question because I wanted to, like, you know, how long ago has it been since someone's been in the arcade? Or, you know, is there a childhood arcade that's come and gone? And do you remember the last one you played? But there's still a lot of, like, modern and current arcades and everything. So, yeah, this, I don't know. I haven't asked this one a lot either, but yeah. But for me, what is the last arcade game you played? I think that would be when I was at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Played a bunch there. That place is that's a really cool thing to go to if you're in the Portland area or when I travel to it. It's like there was a ton of free to play arcade games, but Forgotten Worlds was, I think, the last one we played before we kind of like packed up and left and everything. So that was cool. Again, like working on like this Final Fight book, I've done some research on Forgotten Worlds. That was three of the key developers of Forgotten Worlds continued on to work on their next game, which ended up being Final Fight. So it was just kind of fun to see that game like in person. I never had a chance to play that when I was younger. That wasn't at any of the arcades that, you know, I went to growing up or anything. So I liked the little control dial and everything, like kind of a rad shooter. I liked the chunky sprites of it all and everything. But yeah, Forgotten Worlds was the last one that I have played. What is an option or setting you always change before starting a game? I always have to change the inverting of the aim. So the X and Y axis, you know, like I need to invert the X axis, like the up and down at least. It's really odd that, you know, when they let you change independently both of them, like I will sometimes leave the other axis to normal, but like up and down, I need that inverted. You know, just in my head, I just think about like the polarity of like the analog stick being like a, you know, if it was a pull through a globe, you know, because you're moving around on a circular or a circular shaped object. If I'm tilting that down, I'm thinking of on the back side of it, you know, where is that going? And that's, you know, where the camera control will affect it. So it's like a, you know, flight stick type of thing or something like that. Like, I get it. It's not going to be necessarily intuitive. You think that you're visually looking at pressing up on the analog stick, you want it to go up, whatever it may be. I've just always been an inverted aim type person, so it is just something I've gotten used to, and now it's like, you know, being right-handed, it's not something I'm gonna necessarily be able to modify or trick myself into going back on. So yeah, that would be that. So yeah, that's the those are the icebreakers. So let's answer a couple of the episode questions, and let's pull up the list and see which ones we'll start with. We'll go with the evergreen question. We've answered this recently as well, but what is a personal favorite game or an average game you love that doesn't get enough attention? I will pick Pixel Junk Monsters. That is it's like a tower defense game. It was originally like a PlayStation Network title back in the early years for the PS3. And then it had like a super, super fun like PSP version, like an enhanced version that just kind of added more content to it and everything. That version is also available to like download over the PlayStation Network now, I think. Pixel Junk Monsters Deluxe. Yeah, something about it just, I mean, I'm a big fan of like tower defense games. The something just about like the set it and forget it, like, you know, you still have to have a strategy, you still have to have like a thought and a process to it all, but like to not have to like
constantly be in like engaging with like, you know, real time, like movement or things like that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you plan or place out your strategy and then you see the result of that. You know, some allow you to like kind of make modifications, obviously, like during the actual like level itself or during like the pathing of like the enemies themselves. And Pixel Dark Monsters lets you do that. You actually physically do control a character like out on the map, and the where you place your towers to help like combat against like the different enemies that come through, like the spiders and flying things and everything. You're converting trees into these towers, and as you like run through and brush up against and kind of like, you know, shake these trees, you might get like an upgrade like gem or like coins to help give you some more money. There's usually like a few trees, you know, throughout the map that will have some of those hidden. So as like the waves are coming, the early waves, sometimes running around just to kind of get some bonus gold or bonus gems, because during in between each wave you'll get like a multiplier like bonus to like what you have and everything. So there's like this give and take to it all, and you know, not overspending and just plopping down like all of your money out there on towers. Like, you can, you know, try and use like the minimum amount that needs to be used, because then you'll get some additional like gold multiplier, you know, at the end of the each round. But you can also stand and you do like I guess it's a dance. Your character just kind of like dances around a little bit. But if you're doing that in front of a tower, it will help level it up. Like, it gradually like increases its own like internal experience and will level it up to like a level 2 or, you know, level 3, just kind of max it out, like version of itself. Typically they'll get experience by killing enemies automatically, but that's a way to like help kind of speed that up or like force that level up. You can also use the gems, these like blue gems you find, but that's also the currency you'll have to use going back to like your defense point, like your little home base, to buy new types of towers that will like, you know, be improvements on your basic tower types. But yeah, it just like the give and take of it all, the design of it, the visual charm of it, like the strategy behind it, like that is just one of my favorite tower defense games of all time. Like, I really wish there was like more. I've gone back and actually, you know, played it a few different times, just to revisit it, because like some of the, I mean, obviously it's been so long, I sometimes forget some of the challenges and or like, you know, the wave the wave order for some levels for some of the harder challenges. But just, you know, being able to get in there and have some fun with it, I mean, like it's been great. There was a sequel, Pixel Junk Monsters 2, that came out PS4 time, like kind of like later in the PS4 life, that like brought it into like a fully like 3D world and everything, and it's similar concept, and it had like a world map for like to go in between stages, just like the first one had. But they kind of like, they basically just kind of tried to improve or grow every mechanic from the first one, you know, in some way. And it just didn't hook me as much. But now thinking about it, you know, I never did finish it, and I probably, you know, thinking about it and giving myself the itch to want to play it again, maybe I jump in and jump into Pixel Junk Monsters 2. But yeah, if you're a tower defense fan, huge recommendation. It, you know, it was early on in PS3 and then it was PSP, so it wasn't necessarily like front and center, especially, you know, in that era, like the Xbox 360 online play, you know, Gears of War and Halo, Call of Duty, like, you know, there was like obviously like bigger things happening for like the mainstream like gaming world, that not everybody was looking at these like indie games or these like downloadable and smaller experiences and everything that are now quite mainstream as well. Like, this is a game that I think would have a great second life, like, you know, as like a Switch release for a lot of folks. But yeah, if you're a fan of the tower defense genre at all, or it even is semi-interesting to you, like Pixel Junk Monsters for sure gets a heavy recommendation. Like, just sound effects, the ambient kind of music to it all, like it's a bit like relaxing to kind of play, but like each level, while you can just kind of get through and get it done, like you can perfect it and get through without losing any of your home base, like creatures you're trying to protect, and get like a little rainbow icon on the stage, you know, for doing that. Like, that's just like an extra level of challenge. So you can go through and just complete it, whether or not you've lost some folks or not, and just, you know, get through to the end of the stages. But there's optional pathways that require a certain number of rainbows to get through, to find harder one-off challenges with different parameters and things that, you know, like you can't upgrade towers, or you only have access to certain towers, or you don't get gold. You only have exactly what you start the level with. It's just it becomes as challenging as you want it to be, based on your own interests. So there's plenty to just play as a surface level, like amount of enjoyment, but there's a lot you can play that, just to continue to dig in deeper and like push yourself like further and harder into like its design and its challenge. So yeah, I'm gonna go play that now. So I'm gonna look at re-downloading Pixel Junk Monsters 2 and giving that a shot again. Just a fun game. Let's see. Let's answer one more. Do you have a favorite genre? What was the first game that exposed you to it? And what are some key games that you love? This is a newer question that I have. I don't know that I've even been able to ask this question yet to a guest on the show. But it's one that I hope somebody picks to answer. But I'll answer that here. I talk about them a lot, but like RPGs, like specifically like Japanese RPGs, that is probably like for most of my gaming time has been one of my favorite genres. Like it was definitely a heavy favorite during like the PlayStation 1 era for me going into the PS2. I think the PS2 really kind of pulled back, especially as things started going in like more 3D. There weren't as many games designed in that kind of classic sense of it. And then the PS3 and that generation just kind of like changed the types of games that I was playing and enjoying, you know, as well. I kind of like grew out of them, but they weren't as easily and commonly available as they were in the PS1 era. But you know, now there's been such a resurgence of them, whether it's like the HD 2D releases, just being able to like go back from like a retro gaming standpoint and play them, or even like modern games that are inspired by, you know, classic RPGs and things. Even just the modern RPGs themselves, like I mentioned earlier about like Persona 5, like that is a modern game that, you know, like scratches that same itch, you know, has turn-based battles, has a long evolving story, you know, character arcs and character growth, just different mechanics that kind of scale up as the game progresses. There's a lot of great factors there, but, you know, all with a modern twist for like to modernize the genre itself. Like that's something that I fell back in love with because of that game. But yeah, what was the first game that exposed me to it? I remember my brother and I were at like one of my uncle's houses, and one of our uncles, and he had like Final Fantasy. I want to say it was Final Fantasy. I don't think it was 6. Which would have been 3. I think he had Final Fantasy 2, which was 4 out here in the U.S. It was something he didn't want us to play or anything. Like he thought we were too young for it and, you know, wouldn't understand it or something. But I just remember being able to like run around the world map and see some random battles happen and everything. And like I absolutely wanted to play that game, but like, yeah, we didn't really have much exposure to it. And coming back to his house, like years later and all that stuff, like I don't remember it ever actually being there. Like there would be like Donkey Kong Country and there'd be some other options, but that wasn't one that was there. So he either got rid of it or something, but like it was this game that kind of came and went, and that was it. And my brother and I, we owned a Genesis, so we didn't get all of the cool Super Nintendo games that, you know, everyone else was talking about and playing. But we did have Phantasy Star. I think it was Phantasy Star 3. We may have had 2, but we had it. We were able to play it for a few weeks, like the full game. Like it was super rad. And some friend of my brother's wanted to borrow it from us. And I don't know why he agreed to do so, but we hadn't even been able to play it very much at all. But he took it to school and gave it to this other kid to let him borrow it. And we never got it back. You know, the kid claims he lost it or something like that. He paid us like $20, you know, to like, you know, as an apology or something like that, which was, you know, I guess, kind of a big deal. You know, $20 to a younger kid was some decent money. But because of that, I only had like a really small exposure to just an early moments of like the game, and never really could like fully dive into and experience the game. But it was another one just like that early Final Fantasy that just kind of scratched that itch that made me want to play it more and find more games like it. So eventually PS1 and Final Fantasy VII, like I was then at that point, when I was probably 10 or 11, maybe 12, but early, young enough that it was, you know, finally something I was going to clearly be able to start like comprehending and like really like understanding, like growing and evolving mechanics and like learning the ins and outs of it all. But like, that was the game that did it. I'm sure I was, you know, one of the millions and millions of people who were, you know, ignited onto that genre and just kind of fell in love and were like looking for anything and everything beyond that. Like, I've shared a lot about Final Fantasy VII on here, so there isn't much more I can really kind of elaborate on. It was just a very impactful game for my creativity and for my interest in games and, you know, what I want out of games. But that led me to then obviously like find a ton of other PS1 RPGs. The Suikoden games are like right there next on the list. Tales of Destiny was fantastic. There's just, you know, there's so many that were on there. And then playing back through like Final Fantasy Anthology and playing through some of the classic Final Fantasies on the PlayStation itself was something I did. I didn't mind going back into like the pixel art and 2D designs of it all. Even like when a game like with Suikoden that was clearly pixel based and had some 3D elements, but it was still a classic looking RPG. Like that was fine with me. I didn't need there to be like this cinematic, like Final Fantasy VII, like inspired, like 3D pushed, like game. Like it'd be fine if it had that in there, but I was close enough to the 2D stuff that was just as interesting to me. So yeah, so when the PS2 kind of came and, you know, you're getting less pixel art and less kind of classic designed games like that, you gave up. There were sacrifices to like world maps or like this feeling of scale that weren't quite there. So that kind of became missing, and that caused me to kind of fall out of that genre, because the genre itself was evolving or trying to figure out how it can, you know, still be established with that technology. Coming back into like the modern games, I do remember, you know, finally playing Persona 5 Royal and like rolling the credits on that. And that was the first time like I'd seen the ending of an RPG in, you know, a decade and a half, maybe. It was awesome. Like just to kind of like be re-inspired to kind of jump back into it. And then just have like, you know, so many RPGs that I, you know, would play after that, just to kind of keep going. I mentioned Star Ocean, Second Story R. You know, I played through and enjoyed the modern like Final Fantasy 16, Final Fantasy 7 Remake and Rebirth. Octopath Traveler 2, that like taking that like design of like, you know, modern gaming touches, a very quick and like awesomely fast paced like battle system, 3D world, but with this 2D presentation, like really cool, like lighting and visual effects on top of like the pixel art. That's exactly like what I want right now. So I also had just finished Dragon Quest III HD 2D just a couple weeks ago. Like, I am like all on board with RPGs again, and because of these like nostalgia inspired like remakes and re-releases, and even like the modern like takes on them, like I've been enjoying like both forks of the genre. So give me those, any and everything. And yeah, the I don't know why I love them specifically. I mean, I think it's like, as a kid, it was like value. It was like long-term, like storytelling. You weren't just playing the game and beating six stages and fighting a boss and, you know, it being over in 45 minutes. It was every time you turn it back on, you were playing another chunk or another chapter or experiencing more. And so there was just like a value to that. And then like nowadays, I just like the pacing of it. You know, like you if you want to lean in and explore the story and just get some cinematic moments out of it, like you can play it for that. If you want to go in and like, hey, you know what, I've got an hour, but I just want to kind of like grind out some battles. I want to like find some, you know, hidden and unique items. I want to make myself like, you know, beef my character up and kind of explore, like, cool. Or with like something like Octopath, like finding the other hidden jobs to kind of like play as, mastering some abilities and just kind of uniquely making your character who you want them to be, before you then just dive back into it for the story. Yeah, there's just give and take. There's challenge if you want there to be, and like you make it that. There's usually like optional, like, you know, end game things as well, for like some really like tough challenges. But just from storytelling and like being able to always get something different every time you turn it on and it not just replaying the same thing. I've always just loved that about RPGs, but cool. Yeah, you know, I think I've rambled on quite a bit here. I thought I was going to have to answer quite a number of these questions, but yeah, I think that's good. Like I said, thanks for listening to this. I know it's probably weird just having just me solo and not having a guest, but I figured I'd give myself a chance to answer some of these questions that I've been asking others. And it's the end of the year, so you know, everyone's got kind of a different and busier schedule, and it's not as easy to put it together right now. So this is what we're doing. So thanks for listening. Next week, we'll do that special Pixels and Polygon Awards, the Papas, and then we'll get back to our regular scheduled broadcasts. So thank you all for listening, and see you next week. Bye.